Welcome to OOD Works, the podcast, a show about unique individuals and the services provided by Opportunities for Ohioans with Disabilities, the state agency that helps individuals with disabilities find a job and be more independent. Here's your host, Kim Jump.
Opportunities for Ohioans with Disabilities Division of Disability Determination, or DDD, in agreement with the Social Security Administration, often called SSA, determines medical eligibility for Ohioans who apply for Social Security disability benefits. DDD is federally regulated and receives 100% of its funding from SSA. Under SSA, disability is based on an individual's inability to work. And as many of our listeners know, OOD offers vocational rehabilitation services for those who have a disability and want to work. For those who cannot work, disability benefits are a possibility. So in this episode of OOD Works podcast, I am joined by some of our DDD staff and staff with the Social Security Administration to learn all about applying for disability benefits. Brandon Smith is a public affairs specialist with the Social Security Administration based out of Cleveland. Robert Fenn is also a public affairs specialist with Social Security, and he's out of Akron. And they're joined by Kristen Alexander, who's a disability claims manager with our DDD, and Beth Baker, who's a professional relations officer and field office liaison with DDD. So Brandon, Robert, Kristen, and Beth, thank you for joining the podcast today.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Kim.
Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Well, so first things first, you don't all work together. I mean, maybe we should help everyone to understand that SSA and DDD are actually different.
Well, we do work together, but not quite. SSA is the office that handles everything from Social Security cards to retirement to disability, while the DDD is the disability branch only that processes applications for SSI and SSDI. So when you file an application for disability, it starts at the Social Security office, then it is sent to the disability office for the medical review, and then is sent back to the Social Security office for the end of the processing. The two offices work together to come up with a determination, but they play different roles in that process.
To Kristen's point, you would apply for the benefits through us, you know, be it online or over the phone. We would gather up all the information pertinent to a person's claim, and then we would send it down to Columbus for the back end, the medical portion of the application.
Mm-hmm. So it's kind of front end, back end would be a good way to kind of sum it up.
Correct.
Yeah. Now that we have that straight, who really is intended for having Social Security disability benefits? I mean, why is it that the program truly exists?
These benefits are available for adults who are unable to engage in substantial gainful activity due to a disabling health condition or conditions, who meet certain work or income requirements as determined by the Social Security Administration. SSI benefits are also available to children with disabling health conditions whose parents meet certain income requirements.
Is there an age threshold at all for children with qualifying conditions?
There isn't a threshold, and the number that I would say is make sure that we separate Social Security disability and SSI. So the Social Security program itself, in terms of disability, is for individuals who are not able to continue to work up to their full retirement age. If we take a step back and think about the FICA tax, the Federal Insurance Contribution Act, those individuals are those who are working and paying into Social Security, which is important that we separate that because not everyone is working or is paying into Social Security. So the Social Security disability payments are for those who are paying that FICA tax and then unfortunately are no longer able to work for a disabling condition. Now, so you have the Social Security disability and SSI, and you mentioned SSI. For children who are underneath the age of 18, again, say it's children, and those who are over 18, we classify that as an adult. Even though that individual who's 18 years old may still be in your household eating all your food, we still classify that individual as an adult once they reach age 18.
For years, I feel like I've confused SSDI with SSI. So
we fully admit it's alphabet soup. Yes. Rob and I have both been with Social Security 20-ish years, and we still get confused. Oh, I'm sorry. We moisturize a lot, so we still look really youthful. So to your point, there's SSDI, Social Security Disability Insurance, sometimes known as SSD or SSDB. It's the work-based program. You worked, you paid into Social Security for a requisite amount of time. The older you are, the longer you needed to work and pay into the system. For most adults, that's going to pan out to be about 5 out of the last 10 years before they became disabled. SSI, Supplemental Security Income, federal needs-based program for people that are blind, disabled, or over the age of 65 with limited income, limited resources. For SSI, there's no work requirement. Mm-hmm. But we're going to get more into your assets and your income and what are the assets and income and resources available to your spouse if they're living with you versus SSDI. For the most part, we're not concerned about what you have, be it $5 in the bank like I do, be it $5,000 in the bank like Rob, who I'm going to text later on to send me some money. You can't be too wealthy for Social Security Disability Insurance, but for SSI, there are thresholds as far as your income and resources.
Okay, I think I got it. That's very helpful. Thank you. How about the application process? Is it the same for both SSDI and SSI?
That is a very important question because many times the public may not understand what's taking place during the question and answer session for an application process. And as Brandon has mentioned, many people do confuse the two, Social Security Disability and SSI benefits. And so being that SSI is a needs-based program, there are certain questions we're going to have to address to see if the application is going to continue. Anytime someone contacts Social Security to file an application, both of those programs are at stake, meaning we are going to look to see if the individual has worked enough, as Brandon had mentioned, the 5 out of 10 years of someone over age 31. And we're also going to look at that same time, their income and their resources to see if they're eligible for the SSI application. And unfortunately, which we'll get into a little bit later here, is that sometimes individuals would receive a denial of the SSI application because they exceed the income and the resources. And therefore, they think that their application for disability has been totally denied, when truth is that the SSI was denied, but the Social Security disability application is still pending. And mm-hmm. so that's where DDS comes into place, where they will continue that application.
Okay. I'm just guessing that's made clear that there is, that the process is being continued to look at the other aspect?
Sometimes. Usually a letter will refer to one of the specific programs. Usually during the course of the application, we, in the best case scenario, we would have told you, hey, you're applying for both programs. You don't meet the qualifications for one of these two because of either you're over the income or resource limit for SSI, or to Rob's point, maybe you don't meet the work requirement mm-hmm. for SSDI. And we should let the individual know that we're going to make a decision, a non-medical decision on that application, and you'll get that denied relatively mm-hmm. quickly. But we're still going to make the medical decision on the other of the two programs that mm-hmm. you meet the non-medical criteria for. Now, we understand a lot's thrown at you. You might forget. So we do get phone calls from someone that say, hey, look, I just applied 3 weeks ago. You guys said it would take multiple months. How come I'm getting this denial now? It's because you don't meet the non-medical criteria for one of the two programs.
Good to know. What about if I'm working? Is there still a place for this process if I am working?
In the field office perspective, the answer is yes. I'm not sure if the word myth is correct in this, but the growing rumor is that you cannot apply for Social Security disability or SSI benefits and you're already working. What we look at is something called SGA, substantial gainful activity. And so there's a dollar amount each year that we're going to gauge your work. And if an individual contacts Social Security submitting that application, we're going to look at that dollar amount. We're going to ask, are you working now or not? If that person says they are, then we're going to look to see if they are underneath that SGA amount. If they are, we continue the process for that application. So work is something that we do look at. And I should emphasize that when we say work, Social Security looks at your duration of work and if you recently at work. Analogy that Brandon and I use, I really stole it from him, is your car insurance. So you have car insurance, and if you are paying it, you get into an accident, they're gonna come back a decision saying you have been recently paying on it, so therefore you're covered. Now you go 2 months, you don't make any payments, they're gonna say you get into an accident. Recently you have not been working, paying into it, so therefore you are not eligible for a Social Security disability. Now that's a little bit of a stretch, but I think many of us have car insurance, so hopefully that analogy helps.
Mm-hmm.
If not, blame it on Brandon.
People who go through this process, it sounds like they do have often questions as they're going through. Do you have any thoughts on that? Because I'm just thinking some people probably do, have some trouble navigating all of this.
We have a sort of internal rule for Robert and I, and for the most part, it's, we try to maintain strict neutrality. We cannot mm-hmm. tell a person what he or she should do. We don't want to lead them any particular directions. We want to just give them clear, concise information moving forward so they can make the best decision for themselves. For me, because I just had this question like yesterday, the first thing you have to decide is, do you want to apply, yes or no? And if the answer is yes, you want to apply, then we need you to provide us with some information. My first manager when I was hired at Social Security, God rest his soul, Mr. Bill Norris, he said, you're painting a picture of who you are and what your condition is to Social Security when you're applying for disability benefits. You're filling in the gaps. We don't know. The sort of a lighthearted moment sometimes we'll say is people will say, hey, look, isn't my information in the computer? And I'll say, yeah, but it's not in this computer. So we don't know who you saw and why you saw. So at least this isn't advice. This is just information.
Yeah.
Assume that we know nothing. Take nothing for granted. Mm-hmm. You have fibromyalgia, you have PTSD. Don't assume that we know how any condition is affecting you as the individual. Right. Let us know. Be descriptive. You want to be your own best advocate when it comes to applying for benefits. That's my two cents. I'm sure Robert has plenty to fill in.
Yeah, if I can add half a penny, it's common in the public for individuals to say things, I was diagnosed by the doctor with this condition. Let's mm-hmm. say it's something as a bad back, cancer, right? And then they believe because they were told by the doctor that they are automatically going to be approved. They're also heard from other agencies that they were approved, whether it was veterans, workman's comp, or other services, which have a different definition. The doctor mm-hmm. does not have the same definition that Social Security has. Workman's comp does not. Unemployment does not. So there are other different definitions. Our definition is pretty stringent, regards to individual has to be disabled for at least a year. And we don't want to go into all the history thing, but it wasn't always like that, when Social Security disability came around in 1954. So my point is that we have to recognize there are differences for someone submitting the application for Social Security disability.
Would you also say, paint that picture with the medical evidence?
Absolutely. And I would say never assume, because I think, like they were talking about medical evidence, they might think we know they saw this doctor, but we need to know what facility they saw them at, the correct place. Don't assume we know that you moved or that you got a new diagnosis. Just make sure that you're communicating that with us, because the same thing with work. We're not going to know exactly what jobs you did. So if we ask for clarification on that, just make sure that you're able to provide as much detail as possible.
Mm-hmm. When on a serious side, when someone has gone through a life-changing event, you know, such as a disabling condition, they are waking up in pain or not able to do the same things that they were accustomed to doing. And so it becomes commonplace for them to have to deal with whatever that condition is. And then you have loved ones and relatives seeing you go through that. So when they approach Social Security, they're thinking, okay, you should already know what we're going through, right? But we do not know. Right. And a light heart way of saying it, from my good friend, Mr. Washington, Denzel, it's not what you know, it's what you can prove, right? And so that has to take place in the application process. And I will add this, because we'll probably get into it a little bit here today, is that just as the weight of a doctor's decision, your family members are just as important in terms of submitting documentation as to what's taking place with you. A wife could say, I know my spouse would go to work every day, come home, and on Wednesdays go bowling. Now this individual no longer has that desire. There's a change there. Maybe whether it's physical or it's mental. Documentation of that from that spouse is just as important.
I think these are all great points. But yeah, I think that, you know, folks applying for disability, just coming into it, the more information that they have that they're able to provide at the time of filing, the better. I mean, having their medical providers' names, their addresses, their phone numbers, as well as the dates they have been seen. If they have all of that information ready when they file their application, that is very helpful. So I think just being ready to provide all of that contact information for sources that they have seen during the time of their disability, doctor's offices, hospitals, urgent care visits, psychologists or counselors, just to name a few. I think all of that information is so helpful. The person filing should be able to give us the job title, but also a description of the work that they did over the past 15 years. A job title itself is useful to us, but we also really want to know the way that that job was performed, because that can vary from industry to industry or from business to business.
It's really helpful to be able to hear and understand that.
When we're taking the application, when the Fed office is taking the application, we will ask, where did you work? And let's say if the individual worked at the same type of occupation, and I'll just be simple, and let's say it's all fast food. So in their minds, they want to say, this restaurant, we're looking for, you were a cashier for 15 years. Mm-hmm. That's what we're looking for. An individual, and the public tends to think that they need to know the exact date of hire or termination or no longer working. You can actually tell us the fall of 2021, you know, something like that. You can give us that information. That kind of hones in. Going back to the application process itself, the medications, you know, sometimes it happens in a funny way. Back prior to pandemic, someone will pull out a fanny pack and it's filled with all kinds of prescription bottles, you know, and they'll lay it on the counter, you know, because we don't all remember what is the medical term of Tylenol, you know, and aspirin, those things. But as long as we know it's Tylenol, 50 milligrams or whatever, I don't know enough about prescriptions and what's the right medication amount, but we will see that. Those little things do help with the application process that Kristen was referring to.
Yeah. That's a funny visual, too, that you gave there, the fanny pack of empty medication bottles. Like it.
One other little tidbit to keep in mind is, should you return to work after you've started your application process, make sure you contact us. That doesn't necessarily mean that everything is going to end right then. I mean, there's different things we would need to assess, and your application may continue.
Mm-hmm. And that's a great point, Elizabeth, because also what happens, I think sometimes people get a little confused over the phone or online when the individual is submitting that application. There are questions which may be similar to when DDS sends out a document and that says within, I believe it's, forgive me if I'm wrong, 15 days or so, you need to respond. So they will get something and it's like a yellow colored envelope. And they can send that back to us. And so sometimes the public thinks, I just answered these same questions. Well, DDS is verifying certain things as well.
Right. And I should clarify for our listeners, I maybe should have done this on the front end, but we tend to say DDD, just meaning Division of Disability Determination, but that is one and the same with DDS, just meaning Disability Determination Services.
Ohioans.
Yes. A little bit more clarification on the alphabet soup. So do you all have any pointers that you would give individuals when it comes to communicating with their actual medical providers about the fact that they're going through this application process?
Yeah, I can speak to that a bit more, just in terms of notification or letting medical providers know. If a claimant does let their medical provider know that they have filed for disability, then that provider will know that the request of information form and request for records will be coming from the Division of Disability Determination. And I find that really helpful just in getting timely responses from medical providers.
Yes, and that starts with the form SSA 827. We have to have that medical documentation in our records in order to contact their sources, these medical sources. And so when we submit that electronically to those medical sources of the doctor, they are going to give us the information we need. Now, I have seen claims in which an individual has the paper document. We do receive that, and we can fax that into our systems electronically. So that can be done. I like to say this. I hope it sounds correct, you know, but the doctor, he or she does work for you. And so you do have the right to your medical information. So that way you can build, if you will, a better case for this Social Security disability claim.
So you mean, like, if needed, to get your own records so that you have the information you need when you're discussing your own case or advocating for yourself?
Mm-hmm. Correct. Yeah. Many people do have their medical documentation. And so they can submit that to us. To the local office, they can fax it in to us or mail it in to us, and we will make sure that DDS receives that information.
Who actually makes the decision whether it's going to be a yes or a no when it comes to disability benefits?
The determination is based upon review of medical and vocational information. A team of medical professionals and the adjudicative staff review the information in file and make the medical determination, while the Social Security field office determines any financial eligibility.
Okay. What can you tell us factually about the likelihood of being approved for benefits?
Yeah, I mean, this is a difficult question because it really does vary person to person and case by case, because everybody, you know, all applicants, all impairments are different. But we do look at each case and each person as an individual and how they are affected by their medical conditions, because that really can vary from person to person. Sure. The allowance rate on initial disability applications is currently around 40% from what we have recently, the numbers we recently saw. However, every determination is different. And again, it's just important to provide SSA in the Division of Disability with the requested information and cooperate with the process just to make sure everyone has all of the relevant information that is needed to make a determination on the case.
Sure. So I definitely get that case by case, and it could definitely vary. But when you say 40% allowance rate, that means for people going through this and applying, 40% of all of the applications are a yes?
Yeah, that's correct. And I know, you know, there are a lot of misconceptions and, you know, a lot of questions that come up during the process of anything from all initial applications are denied the first time. I've heard that, just a lot of different misconceptions and myths about the process. So that is definitely not the case, looking at our initial allowance rate.
Right. Robert?
Yeah, I would say that Kristen, she hit it perfectly, that it's case by case, and OOD, DDS, all these acronyms that we're throwing out there. We have to take a step back, because Kristen is correct, that the public may say, I've heard it myself, everyone gets denied the first time. That is not true. And Kristen has given those numbers. Something that I think someone, the public should also understand is when we're talking case by case, Social Security looks at the severity of a person's condition. Someone could say they were diagnosed with cancer. Well, what type of cancer is it? Someone could be diagnosed with something as serious as ovarian cancer, or someone could say it was skin cancer, which could possibly be removed, right? So those, we have to look at that. And again, how severe, when we're talking about for children, will the child be marked for life, right? That's part of it. And so again, the severity is a important component. And so many times when I'm doing our outreach, Brandon and I, individuals will come and approach us. They will say, this person was diagnosed with whatever that condition may be. Doesn't that grant them a disability payment? Not necessarily so. And there have been some advances in terms of our health and medical. There are times where an individual may be diagnosed with a certain condition and it may have a higher approval rate at that moment. But as a society, we have advanced. There's new prescriptions being taken that people are able to sustain. So again, that severity component is probably a little different than most disability programs that Social Security itself we have to administer.
Is there a way to see how much I'm eligible to receive if I am approved?
As far as with SSI, there's a maximum amount that a person could receive in 2021. It's $794. So if you're applying for just SSI, I can't say that you'll guarantee to receive $794, but you won't receive more than $794. That's the maximum payment.
And as that's per month.
That's per month.
On a monthly basis.
Per month, per person. But a little, since you sort of brought it up, there is a little bit of a, maybe quirk is too strong of a word, but SSI is the one program we have where a couple would receive a set amount. So in other words, if you're receiving $794 and someone else is receiving $794 and you guys decide to get, you know, married, you'll get there's a couple's rate. And this year that rate is $1,191. So you'd receive one check, which would be larger than either individual checks, but it would be a little bit less than how much you guys were receiving separately. As far as SSDI is concerned, it all depends on how much you had worked and paid into the system, but you can create, it's called a My Social Security account. You can do it free of charge, which is my favorite cost because, you know, I'm not as rich and well off as you three, but you can do it, or you four. You can go to socialsecurity.gov/myaccount. You can create a My Social Security account that allows you to pull up your statement, and it'll give you a good estimate of how much your benefits would be at retirement if you unfortunately passed away, and how much you would get if you became disabled. Sometimes people will ask, well, you know, what's the average amount that people are getting? And mind you, that's going to vary, but the cost of living adjustment going into 2021 was 1.3%. So the average for disability workers this year is about $1,277. The average amount for a disabled worker plus his or her spouse and children, it's about $2,224. So, you know, the average benefit is a little bit over $1,200 for Social Security disability insurance. For SSI, the maximum single check would be $794 this year.
Okay.
Yeah. And Kim, if I may, it's important. I get the question in the public a lot is that if a person was diagnosed with a certain condition and awarded approved Social Security payments, and then later another condition comes about. And some individuals think because there's a change, it also changes their benefit amount. And that is not the case. Social Security, DDS is making a decision based upon individual's work history currently at that time and having that condition. It does not change the payment amount. On those same lines, individuals think that if they are receiving Social Security disability payments prior to their full retirement age for retirement benefits, they want to know, well, will that change my Social Security disability payment? The truth is it would not. What people may not know is that when a person is approved their Social Security disability payments, regardless of their age, that amount is near the amount of what they would have received at their full retirement age. So therefore, if someone was, I'm just giving a number out there, the individual is 46 years old, receiving Social Security disability, they reach their full retirement age, which could be, let's say, 66 and 8 months. That's another presentation. But they reach that full retirement age. What happens on our side of the table is that we no longer are going to pay that person from the disability trust fund. They will receive their payments from the retirement trust fund. Mm-hmm. But the dollar amount will stay the same. And when I speak to the public, I'll make sure I let them know they're going to get a letter, and that letter is going to let them know on the front of the letter saying you're no longer eligible for Social Security disability. And I say, well, what, luckily there's a loved one next to you. They'll pick you back up. You read the other side of the paper. It's going to be okay, because now Social Security is going to start paying you from the retirement trust fund with the same dollar amount.
Isn't the allowance higher for individuals who are blind?
If an individual is found to meet Social Security's criteria for blindness, that payment is slightly higher, I believe. I don't know the numbers, but I'm going to leave that to Robert and Brandon. And then also, the amount that they can earn while disabled is also different. So you do, if you become blind, you know, you do want to reach out and inquire about a change in the payment.
You can make quite a bit more if you're blind. So it's $1,310 if you're not blind. That, let me give that some context. Substantial gainful activity is sort of, it's a threshold. And if a person is earning above these thresholds, we usually wouldn't consider he or she to be disabled according to our rules. Mm-hmm. There are, and once again, this might be for another day, there are circumstances in which a person could be making over these limits, but there might be some income-related work expenses. They might have some subsidies, but let's just say you are truly grossing $1,310. You're not paying for anything out of your pocket to get through the day. Your job isn't giving you any subsidy. That's considered substantial. But if you're blind, that amount shoots up to $2,190. So here's where the lines of communication have to be moving in both directions. Sometimes I'd say it's kind of like dancing. Both partners have to be moving in rhythm for everybody to enjoy themselves, kind of like how Michael Jackson used to dance. So if you're someone who's blind and you're making $1,900, that's under the limit. But here's where we have to understand or know what's going on, because often when we hear someone saying, oh, hey, I want to apply for disability, I'm making $1,900, our mind might automatically go to, well, that's 600 some bucks over the substantial gainful limit, but not for someone that's blind. So that's why you got to paint that full picture of what your situation is.
Yeah, and that would be a difference as far as what I was referring to, if someone is diagnosed with one condition and then it's changed. So if someone was diagnosed with a cancer and then later on they were diagnosed, you know, low vision or blind, that individual should contact us, because if we have what we call work incentives, and if that individual was working, there's a higher tolerance that Mr. Smith just went over. Had to call him Mr. Smith. Now he gave a Michael Jackson reference. So that individual would be able to work a lot more comparatively to someone who has SGA for another condition versus blind.
Communication throughout this is really sounds like keeps coming back to that, the importance of that.
Yes.
What about steps that I should take if I'm denied?
Well, the first thing is that if an individual is denied, every person has the right to make an appeal, right? That appeal must be given to Social Security, whether it's vocally, but we're going to want it in writing. And writing, when I say writing, does not have to be on some elaborate writing document. Just the fact that an individual is saying, I would like to make an appeal on this decision. That decision has to be within 60 days of them being notified. So they'll submit that. I've seen it on the back of an envelope. I've seen it on notebook paper, or they can download a document from our website and to make that appeal. Now, keep in mind, there are some steps. And again, if we wish, we can go into those. But there is a reconsideration. So that means the person was denied. Then they will submit the reconsideration appeal within 60 days. That application then is resent to a different individual in DDS, they will it will be assigned to that person, and they will make another review. If that person is denied, then that application is then the next appeal is called an administrative law judge. So they'll go to, they'll have a hearing. If that is denied, then it goes to appeals counsel. So there's different steps. I say that because it goes back to what Kristen was referring to earlier, is that how long does a person wait and to get a decision? Well, sometimes the public may say, it took me a year and a half. Well, they're referring to those stages that they waited to get a decision, but they were told within 30 days, or if it's a compassionate allowance, which we can have another discussion, they could have been told in 3 to 7 days, and maybe that was denied. Or, but if someone had an application and was denied in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, they make a reconsideration appeal, then they do another appeal. Maybe that time frame is a year to 2 years, but there was a decision prior to that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, kind of piggybacking on the eloquence of Mr. Fenn, you know, we cannot offer any specific advice regarding the decision a person makes regarding his or her appeal. They can file the appeals on our website, socialsecurity.gov. Of course, a person can seek third-party assistance, be it attorneys, non-attorneys. We cannot sort of point them in any specific direction. Of course, you know, most municipalities, counties, cities will have some sort of legal aid society. But as far as commercial entities, that's really up to the purview of the individual themselves. And a person, he or she might not want to file an appeal. Maybe you are applying specifically for some sort of insurance related purposes. You get your denial in April, 7 or 8 months go by. Maybe something has happened, condition is worsened, or maybe now you really want to apply again. At that point, it's not an appeal because you're outside of your appeal period that Robert mentioned. So you're filing a brand new claim. And that's some of the decisions that people have to make. If you keep filing the appeals, you have the potential for retroactivity. So to Rob's point, you know, let's say I filed, and let's say it was denied. I filed the reconsideration, it was denied. Then I had my hearing in front of that the administrative law judge, and maybe now it's approved. Well, then I get this. I've been in the process for a little bit longer, but I have this retroactivity, these back payments that are potentially due to me. Versus, you know, maybe I applied in June of 2019. Was denied. I filed again September of 2020. I was denied. I filed again May of 2021. Maybe now I was approved. But those were all brand new initial claims. So we're not taking it back those multiple years versus if you had been in the appeals process. But that, you know, that's a decision somebody has to make amongst themselves and their family members. So we just sort of offer that as a curative information, a nugget of information.
So as far as like having representation by a lawyer, someone wouldn't have to go that route to take advantage of these different appeals options that are available.
Depends on the individual. For some people, the mere process of applying might be just a bit much to handle, and from the initial claim going forward, they may. My 50 cent word of the day is it might behoove them to have some sort of assistance. Everybody's circumstances are going to be different. You don't have to do anything regarding having assistance, but for once again, it's up to the individual in their situation.
Right.
And Kim, I will say that it's important that I've heard this in the public. Someone thinks that by having a representative, it increases their likelihood of being approved. And that's not true. What may be true is that the representative may understand the process, and sometimes the representative may understand some of the jargon, but just by saying I am signing off, having someone else to work as my representative does not give an automatic approval. And I want to also swing back around in terms of approval, because Kristen had mentioned and Elizabeth had mentioned as well. There are some companies who state that you have to file for Social Security disability in order to receive their sick pay. right? The individual may be off of work for, I'll just give a time frame of 3 to 6 months, which for Social Security disability, you have to be having a disabling condition that could or has already lasted for a year, 12 months. So some of those individuals are denied, and we understand why. I'm saying that that's also in that percentage of individuals who have been denied. So individuals say, well, everyone's going to get denied. Well, if you're looking for 100%, well, you're not going to get 100% just on that little factor there that I mentioned, that some individuals are applying because they have a responsibility to their employer.
That's such great information. It's so nice of the four of you to speak with us today and to have this dialogue. I really appreciate it because I think it's great to know, like, you're real people behind the scenes that are helping.
We have great hearts.
We do, and Kim, we do take pride in it. I mean, we do. We take pride in our determinations. We care about the people that we serve, and we want to make the right decisions for them. So none of the decisions are the same. Everyone is looked at an individual level. And, you know, it is an important process. We understand that. We respect that.
Yeah.
We're coming to individuals, or where they're coming to us, at a very important time in their lives, a pivotal moment. And so we take the application process very seriously. We want to make sure we pay the right person, the right amount at the right time. You know, so all of us, you know, even though, again, you may see us, the public may see us separately, we're working hand in hand with DDS to make sure that that application process is correct, that we're applying those benefits. And we want to make sure that a person knows that Social Security is here for them. They have paid into Social Security. We want to make sure, again, that they're going to receive those benefits that they're eligible for.
And if, you know, if anyone wants to reach out to Social Security, we've mentioned the website a couple of times, socialsecurity.gov, toll-free national number, 1-800-772-1213. If you want to reach Robert, 555, blah, blah. So, you know, we're here to answer your questions. We're here for you to get information. The website's a good resource. If you want to go that route, you know, 24 hours a day, you can get information about it. You can apply for, you know, benefits on our website. So socialsecurity.gov, 800-772-1213.
And on our website, there is an ask for a speaker option. Mr. Smith and I, we have been, I guess, what's the word, inundated, or just making sure that we do as many webinars during the pandemic. Individuals are still there, and we're still out there, you know, making sure that we provide the information in terms of Social Security disability presentations. And we could go over the programs that we mentioned. Even though I know we said it today, there's going to be someone, can you say, what is SSI again? All right. And that's what we do. And that's part of our outreach part of it. We have in the past as well paired up with the pros. They do an outstanding job. And so we try to get together. You know, prior to pandemic, we saw each other. And now, so maybe we can do it via the webinar, and we can provide this information. And when I say provide this information, it could be for a company. It can be for a local organization, whatever it may be. We can do that outreach to make sure that the public has the correct information.
A transcript of today's episode is available at ood.ohio.gov/podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and leave a rating and review. We're on social media at Ohio OOD. Do you have a disability? Do you want a job? We can help. OODworks.com.